All right, a few announcements again. Note that we will be reviewing the membership role next month at the board meeting in preparation for the annual business meeting. If you plan on attending the annual business meeting, you must be a member of this local church. So if you are not and desire to attend, please see one of the deacons, and we'll take care of that. And secondly, Bill will have a schedule for set up for 2017. We need to get started on that as well. So if you are going to apply in that area, get with him and get your name. Pick your month, any month. All right, let's make sure you're in fellowship here, and let's carry on dealing with this example. Unfortunately, in a bad sense, of Martha, who's trying to show hospitality, which is to be commended, that she wants to show hospitality. However, what's not to be commended is her attitude and the fact that she let this get the better of her. We've all done that, though. I mean, you can sympathize with Martha, that we've all gotten into situations and it's gotten the better of us, and we got out of fellowship and maybe acted like an idiot, hopefully not too much publicly. You try to limit acting like an idiot to the private times if you can. But she gets upset about this and then decides that it's up to her to straighten the Lord out, which, again, not very smart. But this is what happens when we get out of fellowship. So we immediately lose objectivity, and especially if we're angry, as I suspect she was angry at Mary, and she doesn't come across like, oh, I'm mad at her, but I think that's the underlying issue here. She's upset with her because she's not doing what she thinks she should be doing. And that's there's a lesson in that as well. The believer, sometimes if you get upset with them, first you try to get over it immediately because it doesn't serve any good purpose. Even if they're having a problem, the best thing you can do is pray for them. Getting mad at them doesn't solve it. And secondarily, if a believer has an issue, and get over it, but you should want to help them rather than badmouth them, malign them, and all that. I mean, that's what it says. When your brother has a problem, first thing you do is take it to the pastor and scream at him and all of that, as if I can fix it. I can't fix believers. If I could, I'd fix all of you. But, starting with myself. So here, again, we're down into this some way. When Martha does this, this is really an accusation that the Lord doesn't care about her. And sometimes we feel that way. I understand. When you're under testing or pressure, you might feel like, well, the Lord's, forgotten about me. There was a line out of a Creed lyric sometime back. Hey, God, I'm just a dot in this world. Obviously, you're only one in like 7 billion people. You think, well, am I getting lost in the shuffle? But obviously, God doesn't lose track of any of us. So, again, she phrases this in such a way, yes, I care about you, and yes, I'm going to make her do this. That's kind of what she expected. And he didn't. So in doing so, point seven, she makes it clear that she believed that showing hospitality to the Lord was more important than receiving his word. Thus, she goes so far as to issue a command to Jesus. And again, as we said at the beginning of this, hospitality does not take priority over Bible class. That's just the reality of it. Jesus demonstrates it here with this Mary and Martha incident, in fact. So, eight, he responds by using her name twice, which is designed to communicate the fact that he felt some kindly emotion toward Martha. I'm sure he felt a little sorry for her. And then sometimes, how do you feel when, we've all, done stupid stuff and acted like idiots on occasion. But how do you feel when you see it? Aren't you kind of embarrassed for the person? You want them to get over it. You know it's not healthy or good for them. And you feel bad about it. And you don't want to see people do this stuff. Now, when we're doing it, it doesn't seem so bad. But when you see somebody else do it, you realize, oh, this isn't attractive. And not like I've never been driving down the road and ended up hollering at somebody. But when you see people do it, you think, that isn't attractive, is it? Yeah, maybe God lets us see it, so we will say, hey, how does this apply to me? And that's really what you have to concern yourself with. Not how does this apply to my husband, my wife, my kids, my parents. How does this apply to you? That's the big issue. So in spite of her actions, of course, the Lord was concerned about what worried her. He's concerned about the things. Cast all your cares on him because he cares for you. So he's obviously concerned. Well, 9, Jesus responds with a gentle rebuke that lets Martha know that her priorities have become skewed. She allowed showing hospitality to cause her to lose sight of the first priority of feeding her soul. It is not appropriate to extend hospitality to those that do not adhere to sound doctrine, particularly those that openly espouse disagreement with the faith. One of the issues in 2 John, again, much more of an issue to some extent in the ancient world where everything was much more itinerant. The ministry was more itinerant. People were traveling around. We recognize that this was just the way it was. And John warns those under his charge. Many deceivers have gone out into the world. I think you've got your doctrine or your gospel deceivers in that they teach a false gospel. They teach a different gospel. They don't teach the gospel of Jesus Christ, of grace and faith and eternal security and all of that. They teach a different gospel. But then you have doctrinal deceivers who seek to bring believers under their sway, under their control. Paul talked about this when he talked to the Ephesian elders. You got two types of attacks. I know that from outside, evil wolves will come upon the flock, seeking to devour them. You have false teachers that will come bringing their pernicious teachings, and that is one attack you have to face. And so again, as a pastor, we walk a fine line. We can't expect you to just, you know, live your life, you know, without thinking, without being... You're going to be exposed to evil. You're going to be exposed to bad things. This is one of the things parents have to learn. That, okay, I want to protect my child. I want him to be safe. I want him to be secure. I want all that. But they're going to be exposed to this junk. You can't protect them forever. And as a pastor, you can't protect believers from being exposed to evil and stupid people. And evil people, in fact. Deceivers and hypocrites and these types of things. So what you can do is equip them with the knowledge that helps them to deal with it. That's the best you can do. And that's why the goal of our instruction, we have an end in view. One is to equip you so that you know what the issues are, that you've heard the issues clearly presented, clearly articulated. And that when you run across, as you're going to, I can't tell you don't ever get on the internet. That's ridiculous. But I mean, I've heard pastors try this micromanaging approach where you can't read this, you can't do this, you can't go to a movie. You might see something that's horrible. We were watching a movie last night. I saw a naked woman. Ah, I can't live. It's too much for me. I heard some bad language in the movie. Well, you're not going to protect your kids from all of this. Or sheep as a pastor, you can't. But you have to tell them. But again, I don't watch movies to get my doctrine. I don't say, oh, this movie gives me a lot of truth. I mean, generally movies at best are entertainment. That's at best they can be, good entertainment. Some of them aren't even that. So, so you try to equip them and prepare them so that you're going to face these stuff. And to try to tell believers, this is why as a pastor we walk a fine line, because you can't tell believers, oh, don't ever listen to anything different, because you're going to be exposed to it anyway, whether I tell you not to or not. You have to know how to learn how to deal with it and stay on top of it. And not let it destroy you. So we want to warn you. Obviously, there's a lot of evil out there. And it's intensifying. And we're at the worst time in history. It's just as it was in the days of Noah. And every thought and intent of their heart is set on evil. People who not only do evil, but inventors of evil, as we saw there in Romans. New ways to do evil. Oh, goody, goody. That's what we need. We don't have enough ways to do evil. You know. So they're going to be exposed to this, so you're going to have, you teach them. And you teach them the doctrine and you warn them. And John warns these people here. Many deceivers have gone out into the world. And that's one attack, the ones that come in externally. But then Paul warns about the internal attacks. And from among yourselves, men will rise up speaking perverse things, undermining the doctrine, subtly trying to get around it, drawing off disciples after themselves. That's their goal. See, there are those people who just say, the truth isn't for me. We've had people who come and visit, and they're usually here about once. And they say, yeah, well, you're teaching the truth. Yeah, okay, yeah, great, okay, fine. That's what my goal is. But then, you know, they never come back. Well, what's wrong? Well, they don't really want the truth in its pure form. They want it to be said the way they want to hear it. They want me to tickle their ears. I'm not going to do that. You, those of you who know me, know that's not my style in the first place. And biblically, we're not supposed to. We have a biblical mandate not to do this. So you just teach the truth and let it fall where they may. So you got people who are actively, and I've seen it in several churches. I saw it when I was a fundy out there. I saw it in the Southern Baptist. You know, we had this woman 6 months earlier. I was the greatest thing since Frosted Flakes. She wanted to come to the church. We needed a piano player. She came and she loved it. 6 months later, I'm the dirtiest dog that ever lived. And she's out there telling people, you got to get away from this guy. I mean, I was probably harmless at best back then. You know, it wasn't like I was teaching a lot of false doctrine or weird stuff or even sound doctrine. I wasn't teaching at a very good level at all, frankly. I'm a little embarrassed telling this, but it is. It's the way it is. It's the way it was. And then I get into other, I said, there are Maranatha, I saw people immediately. Some people will just say, I don't want the truth, and they walk off and they leave everybody alone. Fine. That's good. If you don't want the truth, just be intellectually honest about it and admit it. And then walk off and leave other people alone. But to try to influence them, that's another kind of evil right there. That they've got to drag others away into their stuff. And so they attempt to manipulate them and all of this in order to get what they want, which is dragging people away from the truth. They have an agenda. And again, the biggest thing we've seen, we were discussing in the break, the biggest thing I've seen over the years is this slide back into fundyism. And churches that are otherwise sound doctrinally or have been, and then they go back to this nonsense of what, you might as well just go be a Baptist or a Nazarene or whatever you want to be, a Pentecostal. What, pick your brand of weirdo stuff and go do it. But they never got the job done. They didn't get believers advanced. They didn't teach them. Again, I remember when I was sitting there at First Southern, he made an attempt at teaching verse by verse. Not from the original languages. But I mean, at least doing a book in context. Well, he did 1 Corinthians, 16 chapters. He did it in like 6 weeks. On a Wednesday only. 6 classes covered 16 chapters. Well, I'd say it was superficial at best. And, you know, it didn't address any of the hard issues, really. Well, many deceivers have gone out into the world. Those who do not acknowledge Jesus is coming into the flesh. See, John and them are dealing now with these incipient and full-blown now by this time forms of Gnosticism. And there was two views on there. One, that Jesus wasn't physically, tangibly a human being. That he was not full humanity. They believed he was a spirit of some sort, a hologram, whatever they thought. But they didn't accept his full humanity. And that's a part of orthodoxy. If you do not accept, again, we talk about it in the doctrine of the hypostatic union and kenosis. You can see that little point in there called the Chalcedonian box. And this is from the Council of Chalcedon back in, I think, the 400s BC, AD, in which they're trying to define orthodoxy. And orthodoxy, again, just comes from the Greek orthos, which means right. Right thinking. Right opinions. And so they're trying to define orthodoxy. And they say you got to stay within these confines to be orthodox with respect to your view of Jesus Christ. He was God in the flesh. But he was fully human and fully divine. And you have to deal with that. And there's no blending of the attributes to make a third substance. He's the God-man. He's not the Gan. As it were. So, like I was watching The Big Bang Theory the other day, Sheldon and Amy, shamey. That's that was funny. So, they don't acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh. God became flesh and dwelt among us. They don't acknowledge that. They denied this. They deny, and they have weird views. Many of the cults have weird views on this. You go check out don't. But if you check out the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons, you'll find their views are very strange on the true humanity and deity of Christ. They don't get this. So this is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch yourselves. This is all you can tell believers. Pay attention. Keep your guard up. Don't let your guard down with these people out there. Because they're dangerous in some cases. That you do not lose what we have accomplished, but that you may receive a full reward. Anybody who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. And you can say, well, I don't agree with that. Well, take it up with John. I didn't write it. John did, under inspiration. So this is true. And the one who abides in the teaching, stays with the doctrine that he's been taught, he has both the Father and the Son. And if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house. and do not give him a greeting. Particularly, again, if he's an overt, flagrant proselytizer trying to convince you to come back and join the fundies or be whatever they are. Or in this case, people who are advancing openly false and heretical doctrines. This is where the local church has to exercise discipline, and we've had to throw people out for this. One guy in particular, that he had espoused, he would not cough up this doctrine that Jesus had a sin nature. So where you get this kind of goofy stuff? Oh, from his studies. His studies. He didn't know the languages. He couldn't really study on his own. And this is one of the things people don't like hearing. Recently somebody asked me, well, what is your view on the Bible if you know, the English Bible? Well, it's largely inspired, but the original autographs were inspired, and we don't have those. We have a Bible that's virtually inspired, but to what extent can you study the Bible on your own and really figure it out? I'll write a test any of you can take, and we'll see how much of the Bible you know. And I'll give you some passages that will have you running in circles. Because they're hard. And if you don't have the right theological grid, you don't have the languages, you don't have this or that, you're going to be really hamstrung at this. And I can go read a medical book. And then I'll do surgery on you. That's the same thing. And we would never tolerate that. What do they do with doctors who practice without a license? What do they do to these people? And yet we've got ministers practicing without a license, essentially. Oh, they got a license, though, unfortunately. Somebody laid hands on them somewhere. And even though they're not prepared and they're not leading people fully in the right direction, they're out there in buckets full of them. They're everywhere. So again, we want you to think. You've got to think for yourself. We've never encouraged that. That was one of, as a matter of fact, this woman, back when I was a fundie still, back when I was a Southern Baptist, she said, oh, you've got to get out of there. I see what we got now. You got Ron's robots. Yes, I've done so well at controlling all of you. Haven't I? No. First, I don't want to. I mean, even if I think it's in your best interest, it's not my job to control you or try to control you. It's to commend you to the Word of God, which is able to build you up and give you an inheritance. So if anyone comes and doesn't bring this teaching, these people who are actively proselyting with their viewpoint, don't invite him into your house. And do not give him a greeting. Don't even wish him good day. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deed. This is cursing by association. And you get defiled by what you get associated with. So we want to avoid these associations that would drag us down. Again, this is the obvious need for doctrine of separation. So one, it is evident that false teachers abounded in John's day. The prophetic word makes it explicit that there will likewise be a proliferation of false teachers in the last days. 2 Timothy talks about this. Chapter 3 specifically deals with the term the last days. And as we're going to see coming up, there's a general sense in which the last days were inaugurated with the church age. But that's not the technical sense of the word, where we're talking about the last days right before the consummation of all things and the moving into the new age. The last days of this age of history, we might call it. And we're warned that in the last days, difficult, perilous, dangerous times will come. And many people are not going to survive this because they're not prepared. They're not equipped. They can't think doctrinally or logically. Well, verse 5 and following, some of these people hold to a form of godliness. There are churches, hundreds, thousands, millions of churches right now, where the pastor, quote, pastor, preacher, gets up and says, we're here to study God's word. They read the verse, they close the Bible, and then they go off on their tangents. 3 points, a poem and a prayer. All done in alliteration, so that each point begins with the same letter, because that's important. You know, they have a form of godliness. They talk about Bible study, but are they willing to engage in it rigorously? No, they're not. And that's a fact. They're not. And even the ones who think they're willing to engage in it rigorously, if you're not willing to run the race according to the rules, I don't care how much you want to learn. You have to submit yourself to God's system. And that's the local church, the pastor, teacher, and a person who's trained and can do this stuff. And not just somebody up there yip-yapping because they've got a Bible program at home. Mm-hmm. And anybody can get these. For $400, you can look like you know a lot, when in fact you know very little. But that doesn't prepare you theologically. It, just because you can print a Greek word, that doesn't mean you're theologically prepared to do all this. So holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. They talk about the Bible, they give lip service, but will they teach it rigorously? No, they will not. And why? I don't know. That's all I can say to you. I don't know. Why not? I don't know. Why wouldn't they? Because they don't really believe this is the agent of phase two sanctification. They don't really believe this is the way believers grow. And deep down, they've abandoned this. That's just the way it is in the last days. I can't help it. We're in it in spades. Avoid such men as these. For among them are those who enter into households. Today it's very easy. Now they don't even have to go house to house. Radio, TV, internet, number of ways they can do it. Their CDs, their books, and all of them. And I see this. I was looking online the other day at a guy that was out of Dallas, quote, a doctrinal teacher for years. And I looked at his site, and it's big deal on there. And then right over at the side, big deal, finances. It's on their homepage. They make no secret about it. And then they give you this big blurb. Well, our finances are this and this. You can contribute to this and contribute to this. We have a lot of financial needs. And it's really, a lot of it's about money. So we're never going to do that at all. So they enter into households and captivate weak women. The interpretive question here is, do they prey on women specifically because women are the weaker vessels? Or is this a weak women spiritually and men who are not themselves oriented? That's an insult for a man to be called a woman. You swing like a woman. You run like a woman. I remember hearing that when I was a kid. And you knew it was an insult. You act like a little girl. And because men aren't supposed to be women. They aren't supposed to be effeminate. They aren't supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to be men, manly. Certain qualities that are inherent in the male genetics, the DNA. So they captivate weak women, weighed down by sins, led on by various impulses, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And I like it when these people come in from time to time, and they know a little, they know enough to be dangerous. And that's where most of them stop. They learn just enough to be dangerous. Well, again, you can read a medical book. I'm not going to let you operate on me. I don't care. You may learn some things. You may know some things. But unless it's an emergency, probably no, take the scalpel away from me. I'm not going to do it, and I don't want you doing it. 2 Peter 2 also, 1 through 3. Well, actually, I want to point out, too, just as these men oppose Moses, these men will oppose the truth. Sound doctrine, they're opposed to. They don't want to hear it. Again, they want it Operation Q-tip. They want me to say it in a nice way that appeals to them. Well, the truth can be nice, but sometimes it's not. 2 Peter 2. Again, these prophecies are very much related to the last days. False prophets also arose among the people. Just as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing swift destruction upon themselves. A lot of the false teachings nowadays are geared towards excesses or toleration of certain behaviors that the Bible condemns. Many will follow their sensuality. This idea that sexuality and all of this and how you conduct yourself doesn't matter is just flat wrong. This idea that we're supposed to embrace every aberration out there, the lesbian, homosexual, LGBT lifestyle, bleh. First, it is a lifestyle, by the way. And secondly, they can only recruit, they can't reproduce. So, I'm not interested in people that are so maladjusted in their souls that they impugn God and say, I've got a female soul in a male body. No, you don't. And that makes God a complete idiot. That's a blasphemous to even suggest that. So no, I'm not interested in these people. These people are gross. They are one of the few that get the name abomination attached to them. And again, the Bible doesn't use that term lightly. And because of them, the way of truth will be maligned. And in their greed, this is another thing. Many of these ministries are really geared around making money. These pastors that run these mega churches and these mega ministries, and it's all about money. And that's not the point of all this. They will exploit you with false words. However, their judgment long ago is not idle. They're going to get it. You can also see Jude, which is parallel to this, Jude 1, 3, and 4. This short letter from John presupposes the fact that that positive believers, that should be believers there, or a positive believer probably because the verb is singular. So a positive believer has a desire to advance the plan of God. This presupposes that normal believers show hospitality. That's why the warning's here, that people do get this doctrine. They were applying it. So three, in spite of that appropriate motivation, and it is an appropriate motivation, believers are to be very discriminating and discerning when deal. I know we can't use these words. These are bad words. These aren't bad words. Not politically correct. And yet, these are the things that make the difference in life. If you're not discerning and discriminating, you'll fall for anything. You'll fall for just about anything. So when dealing with those that are unknown spiritual quantities. Four, consequently, all believers have the right and obligation to carefully examine the doctrine of anyone who comes to them and claims positive volition. If you want to come to my house, that's fine. But I have the right to scrutinize you. I mean, I'm not going to do this to every person. I mean, obviously, all of you, I figure, okay. You're here all the time. You want the truth. I don't have to stop and quiz you when you come over. Oh, are you oriented? Do you understand the truth? Yeah, okay. But anybody else who comes in or wants to come in, you know, I have the right to go over them with a fine-tooth comb if necessary. And you do too. Just some people out there, they know the lingo. They know the doctrinal speech. They know the talk, and they talk a good talk. But that doesn't mean they're equally as positive as you are or interested in the truth at the same level you are. Now, there's variations in this, and you have to be aware of that. So consequently, you have the right to examine anybody that claims positive volition. Five, if the believer is not satisfied with respect to the doctrinal position of anyone that comes to him, that believer is not obligated to demonstrate hospitality. John's concern, along with that of other adjusted communicators, my concern is that those for whom he is spiritually responsible will be exposed to destructive spiritual influences. That's the fear, that you could be dragged off and become a casualty. Using the shepherd and sheep analogy, the wolf gets you. And I find your carcass laying out there somewhere. That's sad for a shepherd. They don't like that, as you might, from a physical perspective, nor spiritually. Seven, there exists the very real possibility that those that bring false doctrine may undermine all the doctrinal work that John had already accomplished. And John by now is aged. John's towards the end of his life. He spent his life now devoted to this matter of the truth. And to have all of that undone, and it can be undone quickly. This is what people don't get, the fear that should govern this. That these people can worm their way in and undo things rapidly. I watched in one local church as just about single-handedly one man undermined 25 years of work and dragged people off away from it. And where are they now? Are they in a lot better churches? No. No, they're not. Again, they've slid back to fundiism, many of them. People who at one time embraced doctrine, my Hebrew teacher. And as I've told you before, he was a good guy at one time, really oriented, but began this business of hobnobbing with the fundies. They've got something we need. I left them because they didn't have anything we need. I knew they didn't have what I needed. Why would I assume 20 years later they've gotten better when everything in this world goes from a state of greater organization, greater good to lesser good? Things deteriorate. Your body's deteriorating. Everything does. Your car's deteriorating. Give it enough time, it'll be a rust bucket. It may go slower here because we don't have salt and snow. They rust out faster up north, that's for sure. Furthermore, when sound doctrine is undermined, the potential for loss at the Bema seat becomes a very real probability. Not possibility. Very real probability that that's what's going to happen. That you're going to get to the Bema seat and be a loser in the end. And that's not what you want. You're only going to get one shot at that. It's like, you know, every year, you know, they have the championship of everything every year. Whether it's the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, pick any discipline or sport, they have a championship. The NCAA, March Madness, now April Insanity. So they have a championship. And everybody wants to get there. And if you get to that game, you got one shot at it. You may never get back. And as a believer, this is what you have to recognize. You're only going to get one shot at the Bema seat at that judgment. And you're not going to have lots of chances at this. So we don't want the people undermining what we've done over these years. So in the end, point nine, John is quite explicit about the proper application, which is to refuse this type of person entrance into one's house. And 10, additionally, the believer is not even to offer this person a greeting, which means that the believer is to refuse ordinary social customs as a way of expressing his rejection. I'm not going to say, and they say, well, you have a good day. Well, I don't wish you that. I wish destruction and misery on you. That's my view. I'm not going to have a good day. No. You're out here advocating false doctrine. I don't want you to have a good day. I want you to crash and burn. And so you don't have to be polite to these people. Now again, you're not going to run across a lot of these people, but you will find them. And ordinary social conventions, you're not even obligated under that as a believer. But again, people don't, this is part of the hard things of doctrine. People don't want to hear, well, you've always got to be nice to people. No, you don't. You know, we have to each other, but we're family. We didn't get to pick our family, did we? Okay, I don't like you, I don't like you, I don't like you, get out. No, God puts families together. We're in part of the new birth. We're brothers and sisters. You didn't have any choice in this. You didn't have any choice in the earthly family you were born into. It's not like you've got to pick. You just got what you got. So 11, failure to apply the doctrine of separation under these circumstances makes the believer as guilty as the maladjusted person that comes to him. This is why 1 Timothy, Timothy is exhorted, chapter 5, 1 Timothy 5:22. This is why we're warned. And this obviously has a couple of applications. First, what John's talking about, when people come to you and bring false doctrine and seek to undermine the truth. And then in terms of the ministry, of laying hands on people, i.e. proclaiming them fit to be in the ministry. Do not lay hands on anyone too hastily, and thereby share responsibility for the sins of others. This is, again, cursing by association. And you don't want to be on the wrong end of this one. 12, as John makes plain, the principle of cursing by association means that the believer that even shakes the hand of this type of person shares in his evil. Well, that gives you good motivation right there. Bypass. I don't need to shake your hand. See you later. Not interested. Well, F, while John is primarily directing his comments towards false teachers that seek to proselytize, the same principles are to be applied toward the negative believer that has departed from the straight and narrow. One, certainly the positive believer should not seek or desire fellowship with those that have walked away from the faith by virtue of demonic influence or human viewpoint. And there's more demon activity involved in this than people. First, sadly, in doctrinal churches, demons have largely been ignored like they don't exist. Like you just learn doctrine and all this stuff will fall into place. Well, it doesn't. We're in a warfare, for goodness sake. And demons actively attempt to influence people. They don't just, and positive believers are really their targets. I mean, if you're a believer, you've got a target on you. But if you're a positive believer and you want to really make it and excel in God's plan, you really got a target on you. They're out for those. But the Spirit explicitly says that in later times, some will, again, not fall away, walk away. It's much stronger in the Greek. They will stand away from the faith on their own choice, paying attention because they paid attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons by means of the hypocrisy of liars. See, evil men will cooperate with these demons in their demonic influence. Again, the world is viewed as a big casino. And Satan has a game for everybody. You like roulette, you like craps, you like blackjack, you like hold'em. You like Keno, you like Wheel of Fortune, you like slots. Whatever you like, we got it for you here. And we've got everything you want. And, but again, as you should know, the odds are always tilted in favor of the house. And in this case, it's the devil's world. And then there are men, disreputable men, who will actively pursue and advance these causes of Satan's by teaching false doctrines, by seeking to bring believers under. And of course, again, with the advent of the internet, you can find anything. It's all readily available at your fingertips. And most of it junk, but it's out there. Again, so I can't protect you from everything. All I can do is equip you. That's the only way I can protect you, so you know how to think. This is why you have to emulate me. Why Ron thinks very rigidly. Yes, so should you. I try to be relaxed where I can, but in spiritual warfare, relaxation's not the name of the game. In any warfare, tell the soldiers, "Well, you're under attack. You just stay relaxed and kick back, and we'll see how it plays out." No, you'll get killed. You got to be on guard. You got to be on high alert. You know. And we are too. So by means of the hypocrisy of liars, seared in their own consciences with a branding iron. Two of these demonic doctrines are men who forbid marriage. Celibacy of the priesthood. It's a doctrine of demons. A men who advocate abstaining from foods. Like on Friday, you can't eat meat. That's a doctrine of demons. Catholicism's riddled with these doctrines of demons. But Catholicism is just a blend of pagan idolatry and, quote, Christianity. Well, you can't blend those things. That's an aberration that does not come out well in the end. So abstaining from foods, which God has created to be gratefully shared in by those who believe and know the truth. So as John makes plain, two. I got lost a minute. Paul makes it explicit that a believer should not extend some basic courtesies to those who will not work to support themselves. This is another issue. If you're dealing with a lazy believer, a believer who wants to be a gadabout, doesn't want to have to work a job. I need some time off for myself. What for? Well, what are you doing with it? It'd be one thing if you're productive. But we got to work. We got to make a living. And Paul says you don't hang with these kinds of people, and you don't encourage them. Second Thessalonians 3. We've seen these passages numerous times because they're germane to this. Now we command you, brother. This isn't a suggestion. This isn't an exhortation. This is a flat out command. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, we command you. We command you by virtue of the ranking authority in the church age, that you keep away from every brother who leads an unruly life, and not according to the tradition which you received from us. And this gets into people again, busybodies running around, not working. You have to diligently apply yourself in this area, and we're all called upon to work hard and to take care of ourselves. And this doesn't preclude the fact that we could have a living grace need. That could happen to anybody. But for the most part, we support ourselves and we have a little extra so we can help others who might have a living grace need. That's appropriate. And then also verse 14, I don't want to deal with the whole passage here, just the highlights. If anyone does not obey our instruction of this in this letter, take special note of that person and do not associate with him, so that he will be put to shame. They ought to be ashamed of the fact that you won't associate with them. Now, they may try to put it on you and turn it around, but don't let that guilt trip get to you. Don't let them guilt trip you. I've seen people try to do this. Oh, you don't love me. You don't apply under love, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm applying this doctrine. And this is a part of love, by the way. This is a part of the tough love that people need if they're going to be oriented. It isn't all fun and games and namby-pamby and warm fuzzies. Sometimes it's hard doctrines that you have to apply and you don't even want to sometimes. And it costs your relationships. We've been told this in advance. Don't think I came to bring peace on the earth, but conflict. I brought conflict. That's what Jesus said. I'm the center of conflict. Well, 3, he also makes it clear that those that are engaged in flagrant areas of sinning, who rationalize their behavior and do not deal with it with rebound and doctrine, are not candidates for social life with the positive believer. We all sin. When we try to make a distinction, 1 Corinthians, a believer can commit any sin any unbeliever can commit. And this is one of the things, I mean, when I was out there, when I was in the Southern Baptist, they would say, they would certainly imply and dance around it, but the implication was that if you committed certain sins, you weren't saved. Now, what sin is it that I'm going to commit that makes me lose my salvation? Or that means I didn't have it in the first place? Let's see, David committed murder and adultery. Or is it those? And those usually were the ones they would point at. So you're telling me David wasn't saved. Huh. That's a weird theology you've got there, Southern Baptists. And they're not alone in this. They are certainly not alone in these views. And then I've seen people in, quote, doctrinal churches who come up and say, well, can you be positive and commit certain sins? No. You can't. That's their implication. You won't commit certain sins if you're positive. Which ones won't I commit? Because, I mean, I've committed a lot of them. Which one of it meant I wasn't positive? No, because I recognize their sins. I deal with them. I don't rationalize it away. I don't say, well, that's not a sin in my case. Murdering my neighbor was really okay. He had it coming. He needed to be murdered. I am the instrument of God. The wrath of God comes through Ron. No, it doesn't either. I'm being facetious, of course. We're not allowed to do this. And we're going to get a big dose of that coming up here at the end of this chapter. We're not allowed to repay evil for evil. Oh. I really want to sometimes. And you know who you are, you do too. So we have to deal with this. And some of these people, if they will not deal with this, they're not candidates for social life. I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. Okay, well, that's pretty straightforward. I did not mean with the immoral people of this world, or with covetous swindlers, or with idolaters, for then you'd have to go out of the world. Well, see, okay, you're going to come in contact with evil people. You can't avoid that. But again, coming into contact with them and pursuing social life with them are two different things. I don't really care what my banker is when I go into the bank. I don't really care at the grocery store what the checker is involved in. I don't want to know. But they can be as evil as they want to be. It doesn't matter. All I want them to do is get my change right and get my groceries in the bag. I don't have high expectations. And the same way at the bank. I just want to go in and do my business and leave. Same way with my dentist. You know, Hey, Rena's been cutting my hair, thank God. I hate it going to the barbershop. They always want to talk. How are you doing? What are you going to do for the holidays? Blah, 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 blah. You got all your Christmas shopping done. Blah, blah, blah. I just cut my hair. That's why I'm here. I don't want to get into a buddy-buddy relationship with my barber. Even when Rena's cutting it, I'll tell her, be quiet. No, I don't. But the fact is, you know, I don't want a relationship with these people. I got to deal with them, okay. People on the job, you know. I've worked on a number of jobs, well, not very many really here. And when I was here, even when I wasn't on full maintenance, I really had a grand total of about four jobs over 25 years. And one of them was only for like 6 months when I first got here, the cabinet job. I didn't care what these people were into. I just wanted to go do my work, make my money, and get home and study. That's all I wanted. So I didn't, you know, we're going to have a deal after work. Oh, I can't. And I'm not interested, frankly. Say, well, you're antisocial. No, I'm really a pretty social person. But I've got these mandates from the Bible that take precedence over this other stuff. So again, you're going to run into immoral people, dishonest businessmen, covetous, greedy, swindlers, idolaters. They worship everything in this country. But what I wrote to you was not to associate with any so-called brother if he is an immoral person. Or covetous, or idolater, a reviler, a drunkard, a swindler. Don't even eat with such a one. Now this does not preclude that you might fail in these areas as a believer. What this means is this your lifestyle? If this becomes a lifestyle, you fall under separation, unfortunately. And we have to work on these things. It's one thing to overdrink. It's another thing to overdrink every night. It's one thing to make a mistake. You might even get involved in immorality. God help you, don't do it. I mean, I'm not encouraging anyone here. But if you do, you better deal with it and get back on the beam. And not just adopt a lifestyle of immorality. which many people in our society and culture have. I mean, pornography is pervasive out there. It exalts this stuff. And people who cheat on their taxes, who get ahead, and they're proud of it. We know this is not what we're to be engaged in. So you have to deal with it with rebound. One, I don't rationalize it away. I acknowledge my sins. And two, I realize I've got to work on them. I can't just be content to say, well, I can't improve in this area. If you got an area of sin in your life, and you know what they are, we all have different ones because of the genetics of the sin nature. But you know where your areas of weakness are. Maybe it's a mental attitude. Maybe you're prone to worry and frustration and these kinds of things. Maybe you're prone to anger. Maybe you're prone to greed. Money and the details of life motivate you. Maybe you have problems with verbal sins, gossip, maligning, slander. Being a busybody, putting your nose in where it doesn't belong. Being busybody is classified with being a murderer in Peter. So it must be pretty bad. And so, or maybe you're prone to overt sins. Again, you want to go to the gentleman's club. Not a gentleman in there, but you want to go. Don't. Avoid these things. And we got a verse coming up. Matter of fact, I just finished it. Don't make provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust. Don't plan ahead so you can fulfill the lust grid of your sin nature. Maybe you're a person that doesn't like separation, so you want to socialize with idiots all the time. People that are negative. Well, that's a big spiritual problem. It's just as serious as the person that gets drunk, that cheats, that lies, that steals, that murders. It's just as serious because it'll do you in. And so he says, look, I don't judge outsiders, but you've got to judge those who are within the church. So we hold each other to higher standards. This is good. This is healthy. Because the world is just seeking to drag you down and squeeze you into its mold. We don't want to let them do that. Well, four, believers are also to be alert to and wary of those that contradict the sound teaching that comes from the pulpit. If I was teaching badly or superficially or any of the other things, see, I have to judge my own teaching. I have to pay close attention to my teaching. So I know whether I'm doing the job or not, or whether I'm putting the time in. Nobody knows that, really. I mean, I can close that study door and Linda doesn't know if I'm playing online poker or studying. Well, I'm studying. I don't tend to close the door, by the way. Frankly, I don't see any need to. She knows not to bother me. And so, if something's important, if she asks to bother me, okay. But most of the time, she knows not to bother me. And she knows about my schedule, when I'm studying, and all of this. So, and I've got to do other things. I mean, I've got to pay bills. I've got responsibilities and obligations. This time of year, I had to just renew, had to get brand new health insurance, had to get brand new life insurance, had to do a bunch of stuff that was just tedious and time consuming and irritating, frankly. I don't even like doing that stuff. But it had to be done. So if the teaching is coming from the pulpit's inferior, any of that, well, first, you should know. You should have a good ability by this time to know, hey, is he doing the job? Does he teach at a level that's sufficient? Is he thorough? Does he do these things right? Have we ever seen Ron run out of notes? Have we ever seen him come to class unprepared? And I've come to class in all manner of shape, mentally, physically, and everything. But I've never come unprepared, not once. I did a couple of weeks ago. It was kind of embarrassing. I got out of my little schedule, I think, as I might have mentioned this, and I'd taken my computer, the tablet here, out of my little carry case. Well, when I saw the tablet laying there on the couch, I thought, okay, I got to go. I was headed out the door to class. I grabbed it, and I realized, oh, I left my notes at home. That didn't mean I wasn't prepared. I had to borrow somebody's notes, but, that's embarrassing to even do that. See, I didn't have to tell you that. But it happens. So it could happen to a believer. So social life with this type of believer exposes one to considerable danger. Romans 16, verses 17 and 18. And this is clearly talking about believers, not unbelievers. These are believers in the local church. Believers who like to stir up trouble. You know, like I said, we many of us knew this particular guy, and he was good at this. He was good at undermining the teaching in very subtle ways. He'd come to you, how do you feel about this? What do you think? You're a positive believer. And he was seeking to manipulate people to his viewpoint. And many people he did. He was successful. Well, that testifies to them. How dumb are they? Some of us escaped it. We could see it. You know, maybe not at first, But then I came to realize this guy's a snake, he's a liar, he's a hypocrite, he's a bunch of things. And I had been at one point really good friends with him. But I came to see what he was. So you got to pray for protection. I pray for protection from believers going negative and believers that are already there. Because they're dangerous. Especially if they've been around doctrine for a while, they are very good at hiding it and masquerading. But they're just a wolf in sheep's clothing. And that's not good. Now I urge you, brothers, keep your eye. Be wary of those who cause dissensions and hindrances, contrary to the teaching which you learned. And turn away from them. For such men are slaves, not of our Lord Jesus Christ, but of their own emotions. Appetites here, that's the Hebrew or the Greek term koilia, belly. And you have to understand that these terms were used to denote certain things, both in the Hebrew language and in the Greek. They applied certain emotions and activities and all to bodily parts. They would talk about the evil eye. But it's not really your eye they're talking about. I mean, it's not the eye, specifically the ophthalmos. You know, it's an attitude. It's an underlying problem. And here, they're slaves of their own emotions. They're emotional wrecks, many of these people. And they're good at manipulation and manipulating other people. And I've seen this again many times throughout the course of my ministry. I know these people are out there, sadly. And by their smooth and flattering speech. Well, you're a positive believer. You're great. I understand. You're probably a mature believer, aren't you? So what do you think of what Ron said? Always, whenever they're, immediately your flag better go up the second they start bringing up the teaching. I mean, unless I get weird. If I get weird, they should be questioning it. Everybody should. So you have the right to do that. But you have to ask, you know, has the teaching gotten weird? Or is he doing the same thing he's been doing for the last 28 years? And that's it. And I guarantee you, I am. And if I'm doing it anything, I'm doing it at a better, higher level than I was 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 5 years ago even. And I want to continue to improve. That's why I've got a good job. I can't ever be perfect at it, but I have perfection to strive towards. So that's an endless job. And sometimes it's frustrating. You have your nose in perfection every day. You certainly realize how far short you fall. It's not fun sometimes looking in that mirror, of the mirror of the truth. Well, these men, they deceive the hearts of the unsuspecting. And they're there simply to deceive you and to make you a captive. We don't want that for you. I don't. I've worked too hard at this. I want you to get to the Bema seat with full glory, decked out in everything. Where people around in these other churches, they're going to be ashamed when they see you. Because they didn't make it like you did. And that's the goal. That's why we're here. And that's what it's all about. Okay, well, our time is gone. We will have to stop there. We can wrap up 5 here. Believers should also be wary of those that violate Hebrews 10:25. If a person's not consistent in Bible class, that's a problem. Be aware of it. Now, they may go through a period of time. They may struggle. You may have problems with your job. Various things can happen. But as a believer, you got to say, now that's my priority. And even if I'm not there yet, I got to work towards this goal. And I know what the goal is. 5 Bible classes a week. I got to work towards this. I may not be there yet. And so you have to allow believers time and space to get things figured out and God to work in all of this. Because it's not as though, see, we would never counsel people, well, you know, Bible class, your job interferes, quit your job. No, don't. Pray about it, think about it, but you've got a goal. You know what the goal is. And then let pray for God to work in these areas. And He will. Do you think God doesn't want you to be in Bible class? I think He does. All right, well, our time is up, so we will stop there. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship with one another in the things of the truth. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our souls. In Christ's name, amen.